Locked On Wolverines podcast is back, because that's what we do. Locked On Wolverines podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. I am your man on the ground, Isaiah Hull, publisher of Wolverines Wire through USA Today Sports Media Group. Some things changed very quickly. I was out getting a haircut yesterday, and I was honestly surprised to see that Michael Dwumfor had announced he is transferring. So I'll share with you the intel that I knew or thought I knew, and what I came to know, at least what I think I came to know, because there's a little bit of conflict there and how it affects Michigan going forward. Then we will get into the Campanelli retention, which I think is really important. And if we have time, and I think we will, we'll get into the whole thoughts on, you know, LSU, OBJ out there on the sidelines handing out cash and that whole scenario. Because I'm just like, look at the comments at every single Twitter post that like says like, well, LSU's looking into it. And it's just baffling to me. But, you know, it is what it is. So we will get into that, hopefully. We will see how much time we have. But let's start out with Michael Dwumfor, who, again, I've mentioned this before, I have no problem throwing egg onto my own face ever, because when I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Or if I miss something, I miss something. And I and the rest of the Michigan media had missed that Michael Dwumfor was not down in Orlando. So preoccupied with trying to find out, like, if Christian Turner was there, noticed immediately he wasn't there. Granted, running back, like, you're only looking for, like, four or five guys, right? Like, you have to keep track of, like, 10, 15 guys on the defensive line. But the most embarrassing part, like I've said before, was that I didn't notice after riding several rides with the entire defensive line, save for, like, two guys. Luigi Villain wasn't with us, and apparently Michael Dwumfor wasn't with us. But I knew Luigi was in the other part of Universal. So that is so stupid on my end that I never caught it. It's unbelievable, but it happens, right? Well, I dug after Chris Ballas from Rivals called me and was like, hey, have you seen him? And I said, no, and whoa. I dug into it a little bit because, you know, obviously that point had broken open. The official, what have you, was that he had surgery and that he was getting that he wasn't going to make it to Orlando because of the surgery. That's all true. He had surgery on his labrum, which he injured in fall camp. It was re-aggravated on his only play in the season opener. Missed multiple games, played through it, but then ended up, you know, deciding, hey, I don't want to play through this anymore. I'm going to have surgery. But I was told after that the intention was that he was going to come back to Michigan. So that was what I was told. So, and it was from a pretty good source. So I felt pretty good about that. However, yesterday, it's not the case. So, yes, I was a little blindsided by that. It happens. It's one of the things that my mentor, Steve Lorenz from 24/7 Sports, always would tell me is sometimes you can be too close to the situation. And that's not what I'm saying happened here, but sometimes when you are following a situation really closely, things can change on a dime. Especially when it comes to younger guys and multiple parties doing different things, right? Like a player wants one thing or a recruit wants one thing. A team wants another, right? Like it's like I still see, like, for instance, reports out of, not reports, but people complaining about why couldn't Michigan pull this guy? Like, it's just an abomination that Michigan couldn't get this guy. Well, Michigan couldn't either get the guy into school some of those times, or they decided he wasn't a culture fit. Sometimes that happens while a guy's in school, and I'm not saying that that's necessarily the case, but that is what I was somewhat indicated to today when I dug deeper from one side, and then I dug deeper from another side, and they just said they just felt like Michael Dwumfor could thrive at a different place. That was his feeling. So it is what it is. It's unfortunate because we went from yesterday, me being right on here, being completely wrong, saying you've got your starting four back, but now you don't. But there was, to me, there's no evidence or anything. And I got this question already. Like, is it because they were trying to, you know, they felt that they had really good guys ready to come in? I don't think that's necessarily it, but I do think that they also do have that. However, the depth with now you've got Carlo and whoever comes in to replace Carlo at nose, but then you've also got, to rely on having a combination of Jess Spate, Mazi Smith, and Chris Hinton. So yeah, they need to go out and try to get another guy. They really do. And I don't know who that guy might be. Like I said, I've been disconnected when it's come to that. I have not asked that question of anybody as of yet. That's one of those ones where I'm going to let the cards fall as they may. And we'll see what happens. But obviously there's reports out there, which I've seen the headlines, I haven't read, that says who they might be targeting, so-and-so and so-and-so. I couldn't even, you could put a gun to my head, I wouldn't even be able to tell you who that is. So that is unfortunate from the sense of there's just a lot of depth that is wanting for the defensive line. And you're really rolling the dice, especially because you don't have a 2020 guy. And like I said yesterday, they need to have that Mo Hurst type. And I forget Donovan Jeter is there too, right? Donovan Jeter should be, I guess you're really hoping that he finally comes on. But it's one of those things where, like, I was talking to someone before I went down to Orlando, and they were saying, like, that they were still working on trying to get things from Donovan Jeter that they wanted to get, that, you know, when they go back and look at tape from how he was in spring before his injury, his ACL injury, I believe it was, my memory serves, it is still not the same guy. So you're hoping that you can get him to be back to that same guy, because probably a lot of that, little of that is probably physical and a lot of that is mental. And I know that that's how it is with injuries and what have you. I was not an accomplished athlete at any level. I was a pretty decent baseball player up through the end of middle school. But like, for instance, I broke my foot as I guess I was 29 when I broke my foot. I think that's right. And it took me a couple years before I was confident on it again. Because even a couple years later, I'd go for a run, it would throb, and you know, even after having rehabbed it and all that kind of stuff, it's difficult to get back to where you were pre-injury sometimes. So it's basically, if you were to put a gun to my head and get, I don't know why I keep on using that analogy or that simile or whatever. Not really a simile. I don't have a grasp of what that is, but if you were to use that and say, what do I think happened? I do think it was something of a mutual parting of ways. But like I said, I'm getting conflicting information when it comes to that. But it's unfortunate, no matter which way you shake it down. I like Mike Dwumfor a ton. I wish that we could see him for another year in the winged helmet, but obviously that's not going to happen. So that is what it is. All right, let's talk Campanelli. Sounds like he's being retained from Adam Rittenberg's deal yesterday morning, and then Josh Henschke posted about it last night. It just sounds like Michigan was able to retain him. We'll talk about that kind of at large, and then hopefully get into the SEC obvious cheating things after that. All right, so it was huge, huge, huge news when Adam Rittenberg posted yesterday that Anthony Campanelli would be likely retained, that he did not either get or take, I don't know the specifics of that, the Rutgers defensive coordinator job. Michigan retained him to be the linebackers coach, which I think was very important to have that continuity, not just from a coaching standpoint, but obviously his presence in New Jersey now that Chris Partridge is gone. Again, you still have the inroads to Bergen Catholic, considering his brother's the head coach there. Other brother is obviously a coach still at Rutgers. He was retained. But that is big from a recruiting standpoint, because now you can go toe-to-toe with Partridge, and maybe it works out in a different way, considering obviously in that particular state, sometimes it was a tougher battle because of Partridge. Again, people not liking him as being a head coach when he was at Paramus Catholic, Paramus, however you want to say it. Obviously, the rest of the country, it's still a huge loss. But it's great to retain Anthony Campanelli, because he obviously can go out there. He is a fervent recruiter. Now, obviously, they're probably going to put more on his shoulders on that front. But also the continuity that he presents, like I mentioned, with the coaching. If everything stands pat right now, and I would imagine it will, you know, save for adding another coach, and you can surmise who that may or may not be. There's, you know, the rumblings out there as posted from Sam Webb, the great Sam Webb, and 24/7 Sports, as to who that might be. I will play wait and see, because I don't have any insight. But this would be the least amount of coaches that Michigan will have lost in an offseason. Yes, it's a giant one, but still, considering only once in Jim Harbaugh's tenure in Ann Arbor have they lost two or less, and they've never lost less until this year. 2015, they lost defensive coordinator DJ Durkin, who took the Maryland job. Greg Jackson went back to the NFL, the safeties coach. And John Baxter, the special teams coordinator, went back to USC. 2016 was a big loss with two guys, Jed Fish, who clearly had the mastery of the offense, and Tyrone Wheatley, the running backs coach and Michigan football favorite son. He departed for the NFL. 2017, Tim Drevno was essentially shown the door, but he went back to USC. Brian Smith got an upgrade for him, going from safeties coach to Rice defensive coordinator. And Greg Fry, co-offensive line coach, again, with too many cooks in the kitchen there and what have you, but he went and took his zone concepts to Florida, his alma mater, Florida State. Which obviously that didn't work out that great. 2018, Michigan essentially showed Pep Hamilton the door by bringing in Josh Gattis, after 2018 rather. And funny story on that. I'm probably sharing way too much. No, I can't. I'm not going to tell it. Sorry. I really wish I could. I'm not going to. But Pep Hamilton obviously saw the writing on the wall, got his XFL job as GM and head coach. And then the 1.5 turn coats in Al Washington and Greg Madison leaving Ann Arbor for Columbus. Al Washington, you expect that. Columbus native, son of a legendary Ohio State player and team captain. That makes sense. Greg Madison departing there, that's just, I mean, even I who tends to be as impartial as you possibly can be in my shoes, having my degree and what have you, from, you know, growing up a Michigan fan and now covering the team for a living, I tend to be very even keeled with all these things. There's not many emotions that boil up with a win or a loss. But even I have a hard time looking at him in the same way, because there's just some things you don't do, and Greg Madison did it. And then 2019, it would just be Chris Partridge. And like I said before, Chris Partridge, I think I said this, Chris, the reason why Chris Partridge left was because he wanted a defensive coordinator job. Like, that was highly on his mind. and Michigan not really getting over the hump, really, and obviously not promoting him, didn't help the situation. So yes, Ole Miss is an uphill battle, and it's Lane Kiffin and what have you. But Chris Partridge left and got that defensive coordinator or co-defensive coordinator title, because titles a lot of times is all that matters, right? Like, we look at Ohio State, for instance. Greg Madison left to become defensive coordinator, but he shared that with Jeff Hafley, and Jeff Hafley was the one who got the head coaching job out of it. But who's to say Greg Madison wasn't the bigger component there? Because Ohio State already had a bunch of 4 and 5 stars, but they had awful, awful technique. And what happened when Greg Madison came to Ann Arbor after he left the Baltimore Ravens? Michigan had awful, awful technique, and he shored it up. This year, obviously, it worked. So sometimes all you want is that, and from what I was told, it would probably be a short-term deal for Partridge there anyhow. So, but yeah. So it's big to keep another recruiter in Campanelli, a guy who has only been on campus for a year, but obviously gets a lot of the respect from a lot of guys. He did a great job working with what he had and what have you. And you can look at the job that the linebackers did most of the time. Not all, obviously, the Viper position with Kalik Hudson, he was great, I'd say 80% of the time, and then there'd just be these lapses in some of these games where it felt like he was trying to do too much. But I think, again, anytime you can have continuity at the position coaching level, it's important because it's the same voice. And to bring back a young, awesome dude like Campanelli, I have so much respect for this guy. I think it's great. I think it's huge. So I think actually that's all I got. We'll talk about this other situation going on down south in the post-national championship game. And just my thoughts on it. I know it's a little bit more macro than we get on this show, but we'll do that. Remember, if you are looking to reach a more upscale male audience and your company could be mentioned right now, email me at ihole@usatoday.com to get more details about increasing your business. All right, so if you haven't heard, just to give a quick recap, after LSU won the national championship game, favorite son of the Tigers, Cleveland Browns wide receiver, is down there on the sideline, handing out what looked to be cash to multiple players. And that includes, obviously, a guy like Joe Burrow got cash. He was just like, you know, just pulled out of his pocket and was just had a stack of what looked to be money and was just handing it out to him, to wide receiver Jefferson, and some others. Now, Burrow, his eligibility officially exhausted. Whatever. You can do that. Jefferson, if he doesn't declare for the draft, he just took an impermissible benefit. So LSU immediately came out and said, no, this was fake money. And Ed Orgeron was asked about it in the aftermath and said, I was not made aware of any of this. And then Joe Burrow came out and said, no, I got real money. which you got to admire the honesty, because if he said, no, it was fake money, it was just like this, like, incentive he gave us, and it wasn't real, but, you know, also just like a symbolic thing to show us that we could go and get it. But the fact that he came out and said, we got real money, that poses an issue, right? Because they're not even hiding it. Not even hiding it. And you can sit here and say, and this is what, like, a lot of the comments said, and most of them were, you know, had a big Alabama A, or, you know, another SEC emblem associated with their Twitter accounts. But everyone said, like, was they're posting like pick, you know, like, tweets of saying like what the bonuses were for the coaches and what the you know, how much money these schools are ranking in, and saying like, well, good for them. They deserve it. Now, whether they deserve it or not, it's not part of the point, because I do think that, yes, that, I mean, guys should be able to be compensated. And hell, if you really want to, you know, say like a millionaire alum comes down and starts handing out cash after winning the national championship game, yes, I think that's probably should be fine, right? But it's not, because it's against the rules. It's an impermissible benefit. The rules are what the rules are. You can sit there and argue the morality or lack of morality of the rules. You can say the rules should be changed, thus this should be fair, but that's not how it is. And it kind of ties into what we were saying yesterday, the whole, well, LSU went from, took them 7 years, or yeah, 7 years to even get back to this game after losing to Alabama in 2012 or whatever it was. I remember. But it doesn't mean that they were playing with a shorthanded deck. Actually, LSU has been one of the best, most talented teams in the country. They just had an archaic offense. You just can't, like, it's just brazen that someone would think that that is a good idea. Because what's always the joke, right? Like, when someone's doing really well, I see, against Michigan, I see a million funny Twitter accounts being like, all right, what's his Venmo name? I'm going to send him $15 and alert the NCAA. Guess what? It is against the rules. And considering the SEC is the one that tends to get that type of limelight, considering, remember last summer with when Overtime by John U. Bacon came out, and Jim Harbaugh there was one chapter where he said it's hard to beat the cheaters, and you had my former employer, a writer there, putting words into his mouth saying, Jim Harbaugh says it's hard to beat the cheaters in the SEC. Never said the SEC. Literally. It wasn't even insinuated in that chapter which schools he was even referring to, but it's such an open secret that these guys dole out cash for players. And I know specific situations, and I won't mention them because it's completely uncorroborated, but you hear the same stories all the time with particular financial amounts or different scenarios that happened. You just can't do it. And I also don't think, like I saw my good friend Eric Upchurch, a fellow photographer, is now with the Wolverines Lounge, which is a friendly site to us, and with Brandon Justice, and it's his site that he created. But he tweeted, if this is going to be the thing, Michigan needs to be dropping off bags. And I actually disagree with him on that, because until it gets to be something that's legal, stay out of it. Because you know what? NCAA, I do agree, will not do anything about this. What will probably happen is LSU will say, our bad, and self-impose a slap on the wrist, and that's what they'll get. NCAA will be like, yeah, that's fine. And Michigan needs to stay out of that fray until things get worked out. Because the last you don't know what would happen with a northern school that's being brazen. You can sit there and say, well, if those schools can get away with it, if LSU can get away with it, so can Michigan. Well, maybe, maybe not. And Michigan prides itself on the integrity, being leaders and best, all of that. I do know that those inside that building do their best to hold themselves to that standard. I have not heard of any egregious impropriety, at least since I've been covering the team since 2015. So I say stick to that. But anyway, that's all I got. for today. Tomorrow's the mailbag, so we will tackle your Michigan football questions. I'm sure we're going to get a lot of the same questions that I've been getting every week. Who's transferring in? What grad transfers are we looking for? And I'm probably not going to have an answer to that, but maybe I'll dig a little bit. We'll see. So for the Lockdown Wolverines podcast, I'm your man on the ground, Isaiah Hole. Find me online at Isaiah Hole. Follow the podcast at On Wolverines. Follow Wolverines Wire at Wolverines Wire. If you would like to be a featured sponsor on the show, please email me at ihole@usatoday.com. Find us on iTunes, Google, Stitcher, Himalaya, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, or online at wolverineswire.usatoday.com, where you can find our daily podcast every single day to go along with the rest of your Michigan football coverage. This is Locked On Wolverines, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day.